We are actuaries. In a world filled with unpredictability, we use our math skills to navigate uncertainty. Actuaries make a difference in people's lives across industries and the world. Actuaries have the freedom to work anywhere. And according to U.S. News & World Report, we're the 25th top-paying career. Make an impact as a fact seeker and a truth teller. Use your math skills for good as an actuary. The world needs you.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. So excited you decided to join us today. Before we jump into the podcast, I'd like to give a big shout out to our two sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shooting machine on the market. You know, their customer service, even before they were sponsors, was unbelievable. It's one of the reasons I reached out to them and said, I want you to be one of our sponsors on our podcast, because I just believe in their machine so much, and it's just helped our team win so many games. So mention Coach Unplugged, they'll give you $350 off. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. It is the one-stop shop. It is my baby. It's one of the reasons we're able to keep this free. We're not going to be charging for our podcast or our YouTube channel or anything like that. But it's also run by a high school coach for high school coaches or youth coaches or even college coaches. It's not run by a college. It's not Zoom. It's not all these Zoom calls. It's on court. It's demonstrations. It's videos. It's clinics. It's handouts. It's everything you need to become a better basketball coach in one-stop shop. So if it's not there, I will find it for you. All right, let's head off to the podcast. All right, welcome to Coach Unplugged. I was actually doing some editing this morning, and it's like you're going to be in the 1,200 range. If you can believe I've done 1,200 podcasts for Coach Unplugged. It's like I won't even start doing the math on how much of my life has been in front of a microphone, but it's been fun. I've learned so much. I think it's helped my program and my team too. But Coach Horowitz. So Dan, I'm going to have you kind of introduce yourself and kind of tell the audience. I've done some reading this morning on you and kind of your basketball journey, and then kind of ran across your book, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. So I want to talk about that too, but just kind of tell us a little bit about your journey, your coaching journey, and then we'll dive into kind of how you got into your consulting thing in your book and all of the building culture and all of that. So tell us a little bit about yourself is what I say, you know, give us some, not the elevator pitch, but give us kind of your, if we were making a 30 or 27 minute documentary of your life, what would it say at this point? That's what I'm saying to you. All right, go ahead. I'm going to turn it over to you, Dan.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. Very excited to, you know, have a great conversation today. So basketball journey, I have an older brother that's 5 years older named David, and a twin brother named Ben. So David's the one that kind of got me into playing basketball, and you got to play with his friends when we were younger. And I just always loved
that competing. Is a big deal, isn't it? I had an older brother too. That was almost 4 years. Like from a Hooper standpoint, big deal. Like it's always, cause you're always tagging along and they can't get 10. So you're the not, you're the 10th or the eighth or the seventh or whatever. So they just throw you in so they can play. I mean, I think from a developmental thing, huge. So for parents out there, have more than one boy is when I want to get a hooper. or it doesn't matter, because the girls can hoop as good as the boys, if not better now anyway. But have multiple kids is what I'm saying. Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, it's a great point. You're always itching to get in the game. So I owe him a lot of credit. And then having my twin brother, you know, always had somebody to play with. So we loved basketball, played at recess, and here in Connecticut on Wednesdays, everybody gets out of school early. So everybody would come over to our house. And
why do you get out of school early?
That's just how they do it. I think they have staff meetings on those days for teachers. So it would be like if you usually get out 3:20, you get out at 2 o'clock. So not too much early, but it's a great time for the teachers to meet, and the kids love it. So we'd always have a bunch of kids over our house playing all tons of sports. But we obviously loved playing basketball. And then, as a 10-year-old, I kind of made the lofty goal of playing college basketball. And at that point it was to play for UConn and Coach Calhoun. And
we've all had those journeys. We've all had, but you know what? That's what life's about. Like, you know, having that high aspiration. I mean, that's great. That's what every kid should do that. You know, I agree. Okay. So then what happened after 10?
Yeah. After 10, well, I was striving for that goal and mom would let me dribble in the house and work on my ball handling and just loved basketball and went on to play in high school. And then my college recruiting went a little bit like this. So knew I wanted to play, realized as a, you know, high school player that I wasn't going to be playing at UConn, but I really wanted to play. So I reached out to 150 colleges, a lot of them more than once, 10 replied, 3 watched me play, 1 said yes. And that was Newberry College in Brookline, Massachusetts. And I loved it there. I loved being in Boston and being able to go to practices of the D1 schools around us, like Boston College and Harvard and Boston University. It was just a
Boston's
great time.
A great town. Boston's, yeah, like in my top 10 towns in the country. I love Boston. I was in Boston 2 weeks ago, and because we were flying to see my son in Vermont, but the flight got canceled. The whole Southwest thing, people that are listening 3 years from now, there was a huge Southwest, like 6,000 flights got canceled. Anyway, wow. We ended up having to fly out of Boston, and I forgot about the Big Dig, man. That made it so easy to get to the airport, going under the water and stuff. It was so nice. but great city. I love Boston. It feels small. That's why I like Boston. It's not like Chicago or New York that feels big. Boston never feels that big to me. It feels, because it must be because of the streets and I don't know how it's diagram. I don't know. It just never feels big to me. But anyway, love Boston. That's my shout out to all the people that are listening from Boston. I like Boston. All right, go ahead, Coach. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's a great place, and I loved it. And however, we lost a lot of games. So I know you're a Dartmouth guy, and we played a team in the NESCAC, the Little Ivy in Amherst, and they had won the national championship the year before. So my second game of my freshman year was playing the Reining champ, and they were like 6-5 across the board except for the point guard Aaron Toomey, who was the player of the year. And that was a big wake-up call to like how good Division III basketball was. And
NASTEC is crazy. Like, my son is like 6'1", 6'2", and he's basically undersized. He decided not to play this year in Middlebury. It's like, it's crazy. It's like yeah, they're as good as D2, to be honest with you, in a lot of respects. It's mm-hmm. Yeah, it's how good they are. It's crazy. I know. All right, so then what happened after you graduated?
After I graduated, I coached for 3 years at the Division III level, and as you know, anybody that knows Division III, there's not really I guess limitations in terms of, you know, recruiting and timelines for when you can do it. So it's just 365, go, go, go. And I loved going into the gyms and, you know, recruiting at some of the Ivy League camps, like, you know, Dartmouth has a great one. And I did want to ask you, they have the best, Coach McLaughlin, when I was working the camp, gave me a chocolate chip cookie, and it was the best chocolate chip cookie I've ever had in my life. So I was wondering if you,
I don't know where that would have come. It sure didn't come from Thayer.
It was the dining hall.
No.
Yeah.
And things have changed since then. No, that's a great camp. My son went to that camp. Went to the Bates one. It's great. No. It's funny because it's like a trick. It's like trickle down economics. Like, if you're not good enough to go to, you know, Dartmouth or Harvard, then you trickle down to the NEST. I mean, it's like a trickle down. But it's funny how it's funny. So okay. So that good way to make a little cash on a weekend at those camps. But what was the hardest part about being, other than the time constraints, was that the hardest part of being a Division III coach, assistant?
Yeah, I would say so, just because, like, you're usually understaffed as well. So, you know, you're one or two assistant coaches and you're just doing a lot, connecting with a lot of kids. I think the hardest part for me was, like, as at that level, and honestly, all levels, you have a big reach, and, you know, unless you're in Ivy where you can only get certain kids in, but you know, mostly you can get a lot of kids in, and it's just a lot of back and forth with certain, you know, families, and you want to make sure you give everybody the, you know, time of day and answer all their questions. So it's just a lot of moving parts, I would say, that makes it, you know, pretty difficult.
Right. I think the Ivy is hard but good in some respects, because you literally can eliminate 95% of the general population, because you can only recruit like 5% because they can't get in. Like I know it's that is crazy, and it's, and people don't understand. Division three basketball is really good, like really good, but you're just under the, you're not under the same. I mean, you just don't have the staff. I agree. It's just, it's you know, the head coach does. I mean, I probably make more being a public school teacher than most Division three basketball coaches make after coaching, after teaching for 30 years. So it's not like you're not buying a yacht with a Division three. I mean, I could tell you the top two or three salaries at the Division three level. And yeah, they're in six digits, but there aren't many like that. Trust me, at that level. But so, yeah, so it's great. So I, did you learn a lot? What was your biggest takeaway?
Definitely learned a lot. I would say just the impact as an assistant coach that you can have on the student athletes. Like at Mount St. Mary College, where I most recently coached, there was a player that loved to shoot around. It would always be there at nighttime, and some of them would get their own work in. And I just think the relationship that you get to have with those kids, and I'm not there anymore, but, you know, helped bring in five kids that this will be their first season since they couldn't play last year. And like, we have a group chat. So just the relationship piece, I learned it, you know, was the most impactful part for me. And I'm just grateful to, you know, still be connected to those kids.
No, I think that's, I would, yeah. I mean, I think that's makes it that, yeah, it's more, I mean, you're playing, I played Division III too. You play Division III basketball because you want to play Division III basketball. Like, it's, there's no glory. Trust me, there's more people at my high school gym on a Friday night than there are most Division III games. That's what people don't realize. So it's like, you got to do it for love of the game. So how long did that journey last in terms of the coaching part?
Yeah, so that was for 3 years after I graduated, and then transitioned out of it, and that's when I made that tough decision, but it led to me writing my book and starting my leadership consulting business, and so like now I still have all those connections and teams I cheer for, and so very grateful just to have learned so much in that time. And like you said, Division III, like, you know, everybody wants to be there because it's like a full-time job, but it's also like so much fun, and the people you get to meet and the places you get to travel to.
Right.
You know, I mean, I never would have been able to go to the dining hall, have some great chocolate chip cookies if I wasn't recruited, you know, for.
Were you a business major? How did this come up? How did this, the book writing and the consulting thing, and how did that come about? Was that because of your coaching, because of what you majored in college? How did that come about?
Yeah, so I majored in sport management and minored in psychology. I really enjoyed psych.
I'm married to a psychologist, so good for you. Yeah, all right. Every coach should either do psych or be married to a psychologist, because if you're a coach, you need a lot of psychology. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, definitely have a great support system. Yeah, so I think losing at you know, a lot of games in undergrad, going 13-87, that's, you know, about three, four a year. But it also showed me, like I said, we played some of the best teams. We played MIT and WPI and Tufts. And so it was just great for me to see that, and the camaraderie and the togetherness, like it was so good. So I mentioned, I spent a lot of time going to gyms all in Boston, and then worked some NCAA tournaments as well. So got to see like Villanova and Texas Tech, like in near their locker rooms. And it was so just, I learned a lot of information, and as an assistant coach, you don't always get to voice those opinions. But I had a lot of thoughts and had a lot of people share their inside look at what they do with their program. So that's what I, you know, try to put into the book, and never thought I would have written a book.
Everybody's got a book in them. My brother's written a book. I've written a book. Everybody's got one book. Anybody that's listening, you all got a book in you. It's just a matter of like, if you're going to sit down and actually do it. I think every human being has a book. I don't know what it's on, but it's a book. Everyone has one. So let's go through that process first before we dive into your consult. So how did the book come about? And then how did you, I can tell you my writing style, but how did it come about, wanting to do it? Like, how did you come about writing it and publishing it and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So after transitioning out of college coaching, it was right as the pandemic was happening, and I kind of just needed something to do. And I'd always thought about it, and now I didn't have any excuses not to do it. And so I came home to Connecticut, and, you know, fortunate to have, you know, my mom and sister here, and, you know, just was able to really invest all my time into that. And I don't know exactly when I decided to do it. Like I said, I think I just really had wanted to share my thoughts, and people had given me good feedback on what I was sharing, just friends and stuff like that. So basically every day I would just wake up, you know, eat something, and then I would just start.
You crank it out. So how many drafts, and then what happens once you finished it?
Yeah. So drafts, I would say one draft. However, I had, like, I call them my starting five that went on my Google Doc that I shared with them, and they each made their changes. And these are all people that, like, value the same stuff as me. You know, like the people first, player second type mentality. And they did an awesome job helping me. So my unofficial editor, shout out to all of them. And then I had a family friend whose cousin, I think, owns a publishing company. So helped me edit it. And they were really, really good. I think I remember it was like 1,000 or 2,000 revisions, like, you know, so they really did a good job.
And so so is it self-published? Do they publish it? Is it in, like, how does that work? Is it like I go on Amazon, I buy it, and they print it then, and then they mail it? Or is it in Barnes & Noble? How does that work?
Yeah, so there was an option to do it through them or to just self-publish it. And I decided to self-publish. And so basically they just helped me get the document ready. And then the other hard part for anybody that's thinking about writing a book is getting a cover design, and then also formatting the book as well. So those are things that another friend helped me get those resources. And so it was a lot of self-taught. I spent a lot of time listening on YouTube to videos, and I learned about probably a month in that you can speed up a video times two. I never knew you could do that. So that saved me.
You can do that on YouTube? I didn't know you could do that on YouTube.
So that saved me a ton of time. But yeah, so just a bunch of moving parts, and then got a few proof copies so you can have it in your hand, and you know, I have it right here. And I remember the first time I had like a bunch of sticky notes that I was like, oh my God, how did I miss all those things? So I don't think there's too many, hopefully none, no spelling errors, but it was a fun process, and it's been really rewarding.
Okay. So that intriguing for those of you, like I said, everyone's got a book in them. And again, lifelong, what I respect about it is lifelong learner, because like anything, like, you know, someone that started a business 5 years ago, I mean, I learned it. Now I have a brother who's like a huge businessman. So I have an asset there, but a lot of it was like, you know, you just got to get your hands dirty. Like, oops, that didn't work. Oops. It's Saturday night at 3 a.m. and my website goes down. Holy crud. Like, kind of thing. So part of it's self-learning, and I think that's important. All right. So give me three takeaways from the book. So I buy the book. First of all, I buy the book. What's it going to give me? And then give me three big takeaways.
Yeah. So the title of the book is Help Them Up. And it was specifically written for basketball players and coaches, although a lot of other team sports can utilize the principles, and even companies. I've gotten a lot of feedback that these things, you know, work in work teams as well.
From a business standpoint, that might be a pivot for you at some point.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm saying there's only so many basketball coaches and so many things, but there's a lot of businesses. And when the world opens back up and you can go speaking, I'm just saying that'll be my bit of a business advice. Like the Alan Stein kind of pivot, you know, you can kind of go to the business world and start talking too. But anyway, go ahead. Keep going, coach. I'm sorry.
Yeah, those are all very good thoughts. The book is named after Help Them Up. So Help Them Up is chapter 8 in the book. And that's just when a teammate falls on the ground, all four teammates sprint over and help them up, you know, so pretty self-explanatory, but it doesn't happen a lot. And it's honestly I guess almost sad to see, like, a teammate falls on the ground and players walk in the different directions. So Villanova is really, really good at this. And they did it in the Final Four a game when Brunson got knocked over half court and all four players within 3 seconds sprinted over. And it was like, they are well-trained, like, you know, just to do that every single time. So
I know that's been on Twitter all. I mean, I have that clip. I show it to my guys. Like, yeah. That's what we need to do. Yes, I know. I love that.
Yeah. So in the book, like, there's an example of, you know, a drill for, there's a coach's corner for each principal. And then there's a player's perspective where it's like, why is it important to help your teammate up? And then they can handwrite in the book, you know, what they're doing. And I have a few high school teams this year that are going through each principal with their team. And you would think like you wouldn't have to talk about it, but I think once you do, like, you know, we were talking a little bit before, like, you set that foundation, and then as you go on, maybe you'll touch on it, but like you give them the I guess base work, and then they can do it. So that's kind of like the setup of the book. So help them up is one. Another one that I think is really important is huddle. And Hobart, where my twin brother coaches, he's an assistant coach there. His head coach, Steph Thompson, does a really good job making sure the team huddles up after every shooting foul. And it prevents, you know, the players yelling at the ref. It helps. It's almost like a mini timeout if you want it to be. And then it's just a way to, like, show your togetherness. So that's, you know, the second principle that I love.
And what do you do? When do you do that? You do that after like I commit a foul or I get fouled?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just a time to come together, and they made the Sweet 16. And then COVID happened, so they didn't finish the season, but they had two really good games. But like, you can just see a big difference, between both teams, like one team's huddling up and the other team's pointing fingers or going in different directions. That's the second takeaway. And then the last one that I think is really important is the accountability circle. I learned this from Coach Mantegna at Blair Academy. He coached Luol Deng and Charlie Villanueva and some really good players. And he spoke at the USA Youth Basketball Academies. He's just an unbelievable person and leader. And they meet as a team after every practice, and anybody can speak, usually not the coach, and they can call each other out. Usually it's just shout outs, positive things. And then if the group is mature enough, they can be like, hey, you know, Steve, we know you're like our best defender today. It seemed like you weren't, you know, as locked in. So we need to, you know, for the future, we need to make sure you bring it every day, because if we want to accomplish our goals, we need that out of you. So a respectful way and a space where they can have that conversation directly after it, and then not go home and continue to talk about those things, but you say it right away. And those are probably the three.
We've done that in the past. And then I'll randomly pick a kid, and then they got to say one good thing about what they did, one good thing about a teammate, one good thing we did as a group. So one is to say something nice about someone else. And then even for themselves. So I love that, because I don't want them to, I love the idea of them saying something, and then I want them all to be thinking about it, because they don't know if I'm picking them or not that day. So they got to think something good about what they did at practice. Well, I did this, blah, blah, blah. And then say, hey, so Bill, you did this. That was great. I loved how you dove on the floor and blah, blah, blah. And then I thought we really did this stuff really. So it makes them start thinking in the positive, because things can be so negative at times.
How much time have you guys spent on that? Like, how much time did you put aside?
2 minutes. Two minutes.
Okay.
And a practice. Circle, center circle. Real quick. Boom, boom, boom.
How about like touches? I talk about that in chapter 2, fist bump. Do you guys have any type of, I guess, drill, or is that something that you emphasize?
We just emphasize it, but I want to track it. I got to figure out how to track it. And the problem is with COVID, it's like, it's almost anti do that
now. Yeah.
Like the touch thing is like, so because we start in a couple of weeks, I think what we're going to do is fist bumps. Like, I don't want high fives. I don't want any of that. Cause to be honest with you, you're not probably going to, I'm a stats teacher. You're not going to get COVID from touching, but it's more perception than reality. So, fist bumps, like, how many fist bumps can we get in a game, and then track it? Again, I'm a stats person. Like, okay, we had 27 this game, we had 13 this game, and have like one of my managers literally track fist bumps or something like that.
Wow.
Or pats. So then they can see that over a season, and it should, when we've done it in the past, it doubles and triples about every month. So you'll start low. You'll be in the, So it goes over time. And then by tournament time, you know, it's like they're trying to outdo themselves. It's a weird, it's this like rolling ball thing. Cause they got 77 and then they just want 78. They don't care. They just want to get more. So it's like, and then they can see the, they can see it tracked in practice and in games and stuff. So that has worked. That's worked well for us too.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just little stuff like that. And again, like people listening, you can be as creative as Coach and I, like you just got to try. And I could probably give you five things I've tried that haven't worked that you just throw out, but that one worked, And they seem to like that. And you're not fighting that uphill battle with them. I think that's the big part. So explain to me how you go out and talk to teams and stuff. How does that work?
Yeah. So I had one, 2 days ago with a team out in Oregon Division III, and it was a lot of fun. And I have a PowerPoint slide and go through the principles and add some cool pictures and just basically talk through things. And then usually the team will pick, you know, two or three they really want to emphasize for the year. And it was really, I think the most rewarding part was a team I worked with, they beat the number one team in the conference, and the coach texted me being like, "Hey, we just won. Like, thank you so much." And that made me feel really good because I saw in the game him on the sideline making the huddle, like putting his hands together, huddle up, or pointing, help them up. So if the coach is the one really emphasizing it, the team will buy into it.
Oh yeah. And it's like offense. It's like rebounding. Yeah. We were talking about this before we went live. It's like, whatever you emphasize, they'll do.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, from someone that's coached a really long time, if you emphasize it, they'll do it. But you got to emphasize it. You can't do it like eat your vegetables on a Tuesday and not say anything for the next 6 weeks. They're not going to eat their vegetables. Like, you know, it's just, you got to every day. It's going to be every day. We're going to do this every day. Here we go. Like, and then it just becomes, I say it becomes part of it. If you think about the definition of culture, you know, it's a group, you know, culture, think about our society. There's cultural things. Thanksgiving is a cultural thing. Why? Because we do it every year. Here's what you have. You have turkey. You have like, well, it's the same thing with culture in a program. It's got to be built into the fabric of it. And then again, math teacher, then there has to be something that you can actually track and something that is agreed upon. You know, I, as a parent, there's a difference between, you know, a consequence and a punishment. Like a punishment is you come home late for curfew and then I take away your car keys. A consequence is something we've agreed upon before. And I said, here's what's going to happen. If you're not, do you agree that you need to be home at 11? Yes. Okay. Well, if you're not here, do you agree that this is what's going to happen if you're not? Yes. So it's that two-way communication works so much better as a coach and a parent than it does like you do. You're being non-reactionary. Like punishment is reactionary. You did this, I punish you. You do this, I punish you. Like that's, so as coaches are listening, you don't want to do the punishment part. You want to do the communication cultural building part, which I think, I mean, again, my two cents, I have lots of opinions. They're not, none of them are necessarily right. So tell me where they can get the book.
So the book is on Amazon, just called Help Them Up. And
that's some good reviews, man. It's like that's a big part of it.
Yeah. The reviews have been great. And each one always, you know, makes my day when I see it. And, you know, I wrote it. I try to be very intentional with the way I did market it for basketball players and coaches. And a lot of, none of these are really my thoughts. It's just from the best teams in the country are the teams that I highlighted. UConn women's basketball. Who else? Tufts University. They were number one for D3. Swarthmore. Probably, if I could tell anybody to watch a team, Swarthmore Division III men's basketball, they are like the best culture I've ever seen.
Why do you say that?
So if you just go watch them, you'll be like, that team is connected. Like they, from the warmups, they're all having fun, but they're focused. The bench is always standing up. during timeouts. They all huddle up, put their arms around each other. They're all focused on the coaches. And if somebody makes a great pass for a three-pointer, they always point to the passer, and they just play really hard. And they jog off the court when they get subbed, a ton of high fives. And I saw this all in person when one of my friends went there. And so I went to an NCAA tournament game, and I was just in awe. And that's kind of, you know, part of what inspired me to write it.
So give me where people can, I'm looking it up. Give me people where people can get a hold of you. Give me your website, give me your Twitter account, give me all the places as people want to, you know, once they read the book and they want to reach out to you, or deep dive into that, where would they do that?
Yeah. So danhorowitz.com, danhorowitz.com. My email is contact@danhorowitz@gmail.com. And then Twitter's danhorowitz1. And happy to connect with anybody.
Was there a Dan? There must have been a Dan Horowitz then, huh?
I've been a long time ago. I don't even know. But yeah, that's pretty funny. Yeah.
Yeah. And then to be honest with you, I just pulled up his Twitter account. And the easiest place is if you go there, he's got a link tree, which is basically you can click on it and it will show all the places he is. I have one of those. I don't remember which one I use, but I use one of those too. So then you can find all the places. Otherwise, yeah, if you're like me, you have adult ADHD and you're going 80 different places. That's probably Dan Horowitz one at Twitter is probably easiest way to get a hold of Coach. All right. So I'm going to do my rapid fire that I do with everybody, that I just ask quick questions. And then you're going to give me a quick answer. Okay. Best basketball coach of all time.
My twin brother.
Okay. Done. That would be easy. Best basketball player of all time.
Michael Jordan.
What was your favorite pregame meal?
Peanut butter jelly.
Really? I haven't had a peanut butter. I love peanut butter jelly. My son's allergic to peanuts, so we don't. I know. Okay. Describe your ideal player in one word.
Leader.
Okay. If there is one thing you could change about the game of basketball, what would you change?
I actually heard this on one of your podcasts, but you guys talked about jump ball. And I think that like whoever wants that ball should be the one that, as long as they're not traveling, when they grab it. But I like
getting rid of the jump ball. That's an interesting guy. Halves or quarters?
I like quarters.
Okay. What was the favorite brand of basketball that you use, the actual ball?
Nike.
Why the Nike? I don't hear Nike much.
The Nike Elite ball. Yeah, it's got good grip.
Okay. I like that. All right. If you could, I'll end with an easy one, or not necessarily an easy one. This is always the last question. What advice would you give your younger self, like in high school or college, I'm looking at your website and you're sitting here and looks like you're talking to teenagers would be my guess. What would be your advice to your teenage self?
Take more rest days. I heard that quote, somebody out there, is working, you know, harder than you. And I always wanted to try to be that person. And now my knees and lower back are feeling the no rest days. So I would tell myself to take it easy. And sometimes, you know, rest days are just as important as a workout day.
I think that's a great, no one's given that one. And like I told you, I've done a lot of pot. I think that's 100% right. Like I had to literally, our football team lost a week ago and I had to tell our football, I said, I don't want to see you for a week. What are you talking about? Well, I go, stop, go home, play Mario Kart, whatever you guys play now. I don't even know what you play. Call it whatever you play and just chill for a week. And they go, what do you mean? I go, I understand it starts in 2 weeks, but basketball season's like 17 weeks. You'll be fine. One week is not going to hurt you, but it will help you mentally, physically, everything. I know. I don't think enough coaches give that advice, to be honest with you. That it's multiple faceted. I agree. Multiple faceted. All right. Well, thanks, Coach. I appreciate you coming on. And I'm going to give out his, I love the one after your at Dan Horowitz one on Twitter is probably the easiest place, but you can go danhorowitz.com too. I love that picture of like me, I'm always using my hands to talk too. So if when you pull up the site, you'll see Coach talking to a bunch of teenagers. So thank you, Coach. Appreciate you coming on. And talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that. If you want to support us, you want to help us keep the lights on here at teachhubs.com, go over, join, 14-day free trial, and then stop the car, subscribe, like, Apple 5-star review. That would be good. All right. Maybe. Have a good day. Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.